welcome to Curmudgeon's Corner for, let's see, what is it? October 5th, Monday, October 5th, 2009. It is still 2009, but not for very much longer. It's just gonna go away at some point. I don't know.
Well, that's, you know, the other day when I was realizing that we're about to reach the year 2010, I kind of like freaked out.
Yes, God damn it, it's the future.
Right, exactly. And you know, we still haven't gone on a manned mission to Jupiter.
No manned mission to Jupiter. No, not even any manned missions. Well, you know, basically, yeah, since we were born, like, we went to the moon, like, once or twice, you know, and
right.
Then nothing since.
That's it. Yep.
No, nothing at all. So the future kind of sucks. So we talked briefly about topics before we started, so let's jump right into it. Yvonne, you wanted to talk about Iran, and I will admit right here, I have not been following it this week. I have still really, really sucked. Like, in my Google Reader, you know, I get almost all my news through Google Reader at this point, but I got myself so far behind. It is October 5th right now. Right now I'm reading the stories from September 30th, so just a little behind.
Oh, okay. Well, the one thing about Iran this week was that it happened that Iran apparently accepted inspections.
Well,
okay,
yeah, and
accepted.
That was implied last week when they said that, admitted that they had this new facility. They submitted that information to the IAEA or whatever, and now I guess now they've made the arrangements. The deadline was like the 30th or something. For them to make the arrangements and set up a schedule for inspections and all that.
Yeah, and they also apparently agreed during these face-to-face negotiations to also send their uranium externally for processing. Now, you know, all the negative thinkers on this subject have been saying that this is just Iran playing games. And that this is all horse shit. And, I don't know.
Well, and just to be fair, including, you know, the President Obama and the Prime Minister of the UK and the President of France. And, you know, so it's not just like, you know, weird right-wingers saying that, you know, Iran isn't being on the up and up here.
Right, right. I do understand that. But the one thing about it is that I guess, look, I'm thinking of the glass half full thing here. You know, we've engaged Iran in higher level conversations that we've had with them since, I don't know, since I can remember, to be quite honest with you. So maybe the Carter administration, maybe. And there seems to be, look, they've put some offers on the table for certain things. I mean, you know, okay, I'm not going to jump up for joy right now and say, wow, you know, everything's solved, the problem is gone, we don't have a problem, but you know, at least, I want to try to at least take them at their word right now and see if actually something real happens out of it.
See if this is an example of them unclenching their fists, as the phrase went. I mean, the thing is, they have had inspections at various of their facilities in the past, so this isn't, like, unheard of either. But, you know, I'd say one thing that, and this is, I'm gonna quote Andrew Sullivan again. One of the things he pointed out is that regardless of anything else that's happening here, now, there are a couple important things here. One, apparently the intelligence about this is something that Obama has known about since his first day in office. It's okay. Like, this is not new information. They just decided to hold on to it until now, which means all of the things where he was initially doing overtures and stuff was all well within the knowledge was going on.
Okay.
And so... You know, one interpretation of this is that, you know, he was basically reeling out a trap for them, you know, and he's saying, you know, okay, you know, I'll give you a chance. Why don't you come clean? Tell us what's going on. Let's talk. Let's do whatever. And then if they hadn't, he would have come up with this and said, but wait a second, what about this? But, you know, they at some point found out that we knew, and so preempted that. But here's the thing. In all of this conversation, because we have moved from a position of we're not going to talk no matter what. They're evil.
Right.
Where we look like the intransigent ones in the conversation, because Iran was saying, you know, look, the U.S. is being unreasonable, blah 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 blah, and we were just like, ah, it's Iran, the evil, you know, axis of evil, blah blah blah. Now, because we've been saying, come talk, let's talk, you know, even if we had absolutely no expectations that anything would come out of that. What happens now is if something doesn't happen, hey, guess what?
We blame them.
It's now clear that it's the Iranians who are stopping things from moving forward, not us. Meanwhile, we've got more people sort of coming into the fold to support our position. You know, you've got, you know, not only France and the UK and you know,
China and Russia also were at the table.
I mean, Russia's said some positive things over the last week or two. I hadn't heard so much what China said, but at the very least, they haven't been as negative as they usually are.
Right.
And you know, it changes the whole atmosphere of this potential debate here into one. You know, again, it puts the shoe on the other foot. It makes it immediately obvious that it's sort of the world against Iran potentially here, instead of, you know, the U.S. being belligerent and Iran probably not being great either, but with everybody else sort of tisk-tisking on the sides, you know. So I think that's forward movement in and of itself, even if you have nothing else.
I agree. I totally agree. So I think that this is actually, you know, I'm quite pleased with the progress I saw this week on this front. You know, I think that it's gone, you know, it's gone pretty well.
And meanwhile, you know, Iran is continuing with, you know, putting various people on trial who were part of the opposition, you know, several months ago, and doing all kinds of things there. And, you know, I have not been following it closely at all, but there were, you know, you still have that whole thing simmering in the background as well. And, you know, I actually want to follow up, because one of the things that we had said, or that you had mentioned last week on the show, was, you know, hey, if Iran got bad and, like, nuked Tel Aviv, no one would object if we just nuked them back. And here's why I think you were wrong about that. And I mentioned it a little bit last week, but I don't think I articulated it as well. Because what you now have is, you know, sort of a profound appreciation across the whole world that the Iranian government, who would be responsible for such an act, does not necessarily represent the Iranian people at large. And so if you go and nuke Tehran, you know, yeah, you might get a few government people, but you're getting all of these other people who were part of the protest movement several months ago and who, you know, don't support that, you know, that sort of effort. And now they might support that effort. I don't know. That wasn't one of the issues. You know, like,
right.
It could well be that everybody there agrees that you should nuke Tel Aviv. I don't know.
Right.
But the point is, you wouldn't just be... You know, I think people now do make the distinction between, you know, the potentially bad government and the people at large. And I don't think, even in the case of, you know, Iran going nuts and deciding to, you know, nuke Israeli cities or something like that, you would get widespread support for just nuking the civilian population.
What I will say is this, that notwithstanding whatever happens, if a country, any country right now, launches some kind of a nuclear strike against the other, despite whatever the heck words of, oh, we got to be civil and whatever, if they went and they tried to nuke the other one back, I don't know what, I mean, what kind of negative...
I think, you know, you're right. There will certainly be groups supporting it, but there will certainly be a significantly vocal group that would say it was, you know, that we could have reacted in a better way or dealt with it in some other way than that. I mean, because you may well have the situation at that point where if that happened, it would be the impetus needed for that government to fall on its own merits because the people of the country or whatever rose up and would be like, you know, okay, that's just too far. I mean, I don't know. Maybe not. But
maybe not.
It would be a very, very tricky situation that hopefully we don't have to see anytime soon. You know,
yeah.
Now, the other part of it, of course, is people envision when they hear, you know, okay, what happens if Iran nukes something? That, you know, what level of capabilities they have, you know, is going to be a question, you know? And, you know, because people have in their minds, like, you know, the day after and things they've seen with
sure.
you know, the multi-megaton bombs that the U.S. and Soviet Union had pointed at each other. Anything Iran would likely be able to make would most likely be much, much smaller, with a much smaller yield. I'm not saying it wouldn't be bad, but, like, you know, the smallest nuclear weapons out there aren't that much larger than the largest conventional weapons, you know? And so, you know, it all depends. I mean, and I could definitely see that being that, you know, one of the reasons you want to do everything you can to avoid that, of course, is it's the kind of situation that could very easily spiral out of control and be, you know, have all sorts of bad results. Anyway, we're out of time for the first segment, so let's take a break, and we'll be back after this.
AfricaFocus.org features high-quality analysis and progressive advocacy on African issues with a particular attention to priority issues affecting the entire continent. The heart of the website is the Africa Focus Bulletin. Other features include regularly updated Africa-related news feeds and a set of country pages with extensive background and links on each African country. If you follow African issues or are even curious, visit AfricaFocus.org today.
Okay, topic two. Anyway.
Topic. Oh, that was very excited, Sam.
I know. I was. Yeah, topic two. Topic two.
Oh, my gosh. God,
I love topic two.
Okay. Let's see.
I wanted to talk briefly, because it's been a while since we've actually broached these kind of topics. The death of Saturn, but probably larger a revisit of the auto industry and where we are. But so the news came out that Saturn is, of course, a division of GM. You know, GM had said, you know, hey, we're not going to do this anymore. But a month or two ago, they got a deal from the Penske Auto Group, I believe it is, to buy Saturn. They were going to have a deal with GM to continue to make Saturn vehicles for like a year or two, and then they were going to find another manufacturer and move on their own. But apparently the deal with the other manufacturer fell through, and the Penske
Group... Well, it didn't fall through. Let me okay. clarify that. It was very difficult to make money with the with a deal that they managed to get with Renault. To be specific, was okay. the other manufacturer. So they decided that it just wasn't worth going forward. The way that Roger Penske and just to, you know, so people get an idea, Roger Penske and the Penske Automotive Group, they own I think it's about a couple of hundred auto dealerships throughout the U.S. They also used to own Detroit Diesel Corporation, which was right now it's merged with a German company right now. I think it's MTU. They're the largest one of the largest manufacturers of diesel engines in the world. They also have been involved in a whole bunch of other business ventures related to automotive. For example, it was with Hertz, for example. They had the truck leasing. They also were involved with. The old Kmart automotive centers and converted them into some other automotive centers to repair cars. So they've been in this business for a long time, and they actually are right now involved. They're the ones that actually import and sell the smart car in the U.S.
Oh, okay.
And what they were trying to replicate was the arrangement that they currently have with Smart in order to sell and market those cars, in which basically, you know, our Smart doesn't have a company that represents them here. You know, they just have a contract with Smart to supply them cars, and they owned and they built this dealership network that they have a contract with which to buy Smart cars, and they were trying to replicate that for vehicles using the Saturn brand. And so they were going to try to go and source from GM for a while, and I guess if not from GM, continuing the future from another auto manufacturer vehicles in order to sell them under the Saturn brand in the United States. The truth of the matter is that when it came down to the numbers just didn't work. They just couldn't make...
Basically, they said, you know, never mind then, we don't want it after all.
no, we can't. We can't do it because they couldn't get favorable terms from either GM or from another manufacturer. So they had to cut her loose.
Yeah. So I believe the end result of that is GM shutting down the Saturn dealer network and
yes.
Telling folks to go to other GM dealers, and they'll stop manufacturing Saturns fairly quickly. I don't know if that's instantaneous or whether they're going to do it finish out the year or something. I don't know.
Well, look, unless they find, they're going to try to do this as quickly as possible. Right now, Saturn is part of what's called the old GM. It is under that part, which is trying to be unwound as quickly as possible.
Right.
And so given the fact that the limited amount of funds that were available in there, and they were really counting on that deal going through pretty soon, they'll probably just wind us down as quickly as possible and just stop making cars and try to get rid of the inventory on hand as soon as possible. So you may be in for a great deal. If you're looking for a new car,
getting one of the last Saturns might
Saturns might be a pretty darn good deal. Okay, you'll have parts.
Speaking of that, as a owner of a 1996 Saturn, the death of Saturn makes me sad in some way. Although I haven't really felt any sort of strong feeling about the brand other than my own old car for a number of years now. I mean, every time I think about, what would I want to get if I had to get something new right now? Saturn hasn't really been on that list.
Yeah, because, they went for many years in which they didn't even update. The car that you got when you got it was close to a brand new model that they launched that year, and then they went I don't know how many years without refreshing it. And to be quite honest, now they don't even make original cars. The current vehicles rebrandings of other GM cars, either GM cars from the US or from Europe. Their sedan right now is based on the European Opel Vectra, so it's not even a it's not an original Saturn design. So, whatever the heck that was special about the company years ago certainly doesn't exist anymore. So, I don't know. Right now, it's nostalgic. Yes, they were. It was a very different concept, the car selling that they've rolled out with the no-haggle pricing, with the way that they built the dealers. The quality of the vehicles is actually pretty good. I mean, the cars are long-lasting. I mean, Sam has had one for now. Jeez, how long is it now?
I bought it in December 1995, so at the end of this year, it'll be 14 years, right?
Yep. How many miles on the car right now?
It went over 200,000 like a couple months ago.
So, and given that Sam care of a car is close to about as close to like pumping gas into it and like just going.
I have to defend myself. For the first 10 years of that car's life, I was religious about taking it to the dealer for service every 3,000 miles.
Mm-hmm.
Now, after the first 10 years, I started, letting it go a little bit. I admit that. And there started to be things that broke that I'm like, that's not fucking worth fixing. There's a problem with a knob on the radio, and one of the times I was moving, I ripped up the headliner, and one of the like little things that you're supposed to put your coat on in the back seat, like the little handles above the seat, it broke off, and I at some point I decided, okay, it's not worth fixing those kinds of things anymore. And then I think it was last year, something like that. It had some sort of problem. I forget what it was, but like I took it to the Saturn dealer, and they're like, they told me what was wrong with it, and they gave some sort of estimate that was relatively high, and said, but it would be unethical for us to do this work on your car.
Because
your car is like on its deathbed. It's probably not going to last more than a couple more months, a few thousand more miles. It doesn't make sense to throw any more money about this. And of course, they're like, why don't you buy one of these new ones? And I'm like, okay, no, whatever. And I took it down to my the local Midas or whatever, and they gave me an estimate half as much and said, I don't know what they're talking about. Yeah, the engine sounds funny, but it's a GM motor with 200,000 miles on it. It's going to sound that way, and so happily, it's like a year plus later, and the car's still doing whatever it does, you know, and, you know, fine. You know, because as Yvonne said, I will drive this car into the ground and I do abuse my cars. But like I said, the first 10 years of that car's life, I was religious about service and all that kind of stuff.
That is true. I do remember that you did take care of that car far more than you ever took care of any other vehicle that you owned. Yes. So
there you go. Anyway, just 1 minute real quick, and then we have to take another break. The rest of the U.S. auto industry, several months after all the bailouts and crap were going on, what's the overall state?
Well, the one thing is that, let's face it, I mean, GM is pretty well capitalized, and so is Chrysler with their new partner Fiat. What's remaining of the auto industry, and Ford as well, they're relatively well capitalized and doing okay, so that they will survive in their current state.
So
they're planning on
to make it out of this thing then.
Well, I mean, not everybody. I mean, you see it as in the GM case, for example. Pontiac will not exist anymore. Saturn will exist anymore.
I mean,
Hummer was sold. Saab was sold to Koenigsegg in Sweden, which
But GM as an entity managed to escape complete liquidation. And, you know, they went through a bankruptcy process, but there is a surviving company out the other end. And you still have three American automakers.
Yes, you do.
So which I believe at one point you had predicted at least one of them would go away.
Well, I think that in reality, and maybe, you know, the fact that me saying that Chrysler exists, I mean, it's going a little bit far, because I tell you what, the Chrysler really, I mean...
It's really just Fiat?
It's really, yes. I mean, it really is just ceased to exist.
It's just a brand that's continued to be owned. Okay, anyway, we got to take a break. We'll move on to something else when we get back. This is the Curmudgeon's Corner Poem of the Week, brought to you by No-Tell Motel. Sling and Molly by Jennifer L. Knox. Sling and Molly were at the beach, lying on a blanket under a tree. Nice. They buried all their 4 feet deep in the bluish sand. Cool. Sling, I'm hungry, said Molly. I would be if I were you, said Sling. Why don't you wrangle up grub like a real cowboy? So Molly walked into the water, stuck his head under, and inhaled it all into his lungs. Jesus Christ, said Sling. Pearls, plastic, and cans sat on the sand space where ocean used to be. I'm still hungry, cried Molly. So they gathered up some pearls and sold them for big bucks to a hoity-toity lady on the boardwalk. They match my diamonds divinely. They used some of the money to buy French fries, and the rest a good house under the same tree they'd started under. Then more fries. You turned out to be a lucky thing, said Sling. You never know what'll happen with people, said Molly, shaking salt from his nose onto the plate. For more like this, go to notellmotel.org with a new poet each week and a new poem every weekday. Okay, and we are back. So, Yvonne, you mentioned you wanted to talk a little bit about Olympics.
Well, I wanted to talk about a little bit about this week. That they awarded the Olympics to Rio. Yes, 2016. You know, even though Obama went over to I guess it was Copenhagen to try to press for Chicago to get the bid, they gave it to Rio.
Now, I've no knowledge of this. I've even read very little about it. But when I read about him, the fact that he was going over, my immediate thought was like, you know, if I was them, that would be a minus, not a plus. Not because I don't like Obama or anything, but because it would feel like, you know, pressure above and beyond, and I should be making a decision on the merits, blah blah blah. And
actually, no. In defense of that, Lula and the presidents of the other nations were also there. Right. I think, as a matter of fact, it was the opposite. I think it was a late charge. You know that Obama went and tried. Yeah, exactly. You know,
I'm saying this stuff about, like, you know, making an objective decision, blah, blah, blah. But there's been controversy in the past about how these decisions are made and how much whining and dining and just short of bribery takes place to make these decisions.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. You know, the Olympics have turned well far away from this event where amateurs got together and, like, you know, tried to excel in sports into this Mega Millions event. I mean,
they started allowing professionals. It's all about this whole big build up about the city, and they build new stadiums, and it's an economic thing, and there's huge amounts of money that change hands. Yeah, absolutely. It is not the Platonic ideal of the ancient Greek Olympics.
No, not at all. So I don't know. There's a lot of people that aren't too happy about all these Olympics, and many people have questioned even the economic value. I
think this is one of those things where, you know, it's very much potluck whether in the end it's helpful or even hurtful to the cities that end up hosting it. I mean, everybody wants to host them because, you know, first of all, there's the abstract sort of honor thing of hosting it. But second, they all assume it's going to bring tons of money into their cities, and they're going to use it as an opportunity to renovate major parts of the city that are not – they usually use it to take parts of the city that are somewhat run down and use it as an opportunity to fix them up, and all this kind of stuff. And maybe it's worked sometimes, but a lot of the times it's just as bad or worse after it's over.
Well, I don't know. It varies. I mean, it varies a lot.
That's what I'm
saying.
It varies. It's potluck.
I think that for Rio, it probably will be beneficial in the long run. I do think so. But we'll see. So, you know, and then there was some controversy this week about after the whole Chicago bid. Apparently, a teenager, I guess, got murdered in Chicago. He was beat to death, and it was on video, and highlighting a crime wave in Chicago. I didn't even know that there was a massive crime that people were concerned about some massive upsurge in crime in Chicago. First of all, I don't know if you had heard about this.
Yeah, no.
But the one thing is that this kid was an honor student. He got beaten to death, and it was on video. And apparently, there was an additional controversy because I don't know if the city or the state or something passed a handgun ban, and that they were questioning the constitutionality of that handgun ban.
Okay.
So there was a lot of controversy regarding that. I gotta admit, I'm mentioning it, but I gotta admit that I do not know the details regarding this. I was actually wondering if you had heard any of the details, but now you tell me that you're behind on your reading. We'll probably won't know about what you know in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, I'll probably next week. I'll be like, you know, I want to talk about this thing that happened 3 weeks ago, because, you know, I keep finding out, like, I'm reading something, and I'm reading something from like a week ago. I mean, I'm only very recently caught up to the point where I'm only like 4 days behind. I was more than a week behind. And I'd be reading about something and I'd be like, oh, yeah.
Oh, somebody we could have talked about that.
Someone was appointed to Ted Kennedy's seat. I mean, you mentioned it last week, but I had no idea at the time because I'm just, I've had a lot going on. But, you know,
yes.
I'm about to go on a tangent. More to say about Olympics?
I don't know. I don't have anything.
Okay, so I was just going to say, you know, this is one of those things where, I use Google Reader for the news, okay? I have it sorted from oldest to newest story. So it's one of these things where, you know, right now in the corner I have 1,000 plus unread stories, you know, and I've always considered it like
1,000? Fuck.
Well, they sort of, with the number of subscriptions I'm subscribed to at the moment, it builds up, you know, several hundred a day. You know, so it almost becomes a chore to keep up with. And this is what I'm talking about right now. First of all, you know, could I dump a whole lot of these subscriptions? Yes, I do, because I could. Because when I go through, you know, most of the time it's, you know, next, 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 not interested, not interested, not, oh, there was a good one, and I'll read it. But the thing is, I feel like I have to have, like, all of these feeds coming in so that I won't miss that one out of 10 from some source that I find interesting.
Right.
And so I'm way oversubscribed. And the other thing is, you know, and I forget who I saw saying something about this recently, but it's like the whole notion of the feed reader and the fact that they set it up sort of, one way to set it up is sort of like email, where it's like, you know, so-and-so unread, and you feel like it's a chore. You got to read all this stuff. You know, there's another possibility here, which is I could flip it and have it always newest first, and I'm always reading the newest stuff that comes in, and if I get behind, oh, well, that stuff's gone, you know?
Yeah.
And not even worry about that. And, I have, like, you know, a mental block against doing that because I'm, of course, I've got all these messages. I have to read them. I might miss something. But, you know, if I just sort of took it as a flow, a river, and you look at the latest things when I get a chance, and, you know, it might be a much more relaxed sort of thing, you know, and I'm not saying I'm, like, really stressing out about this, but on the other hand, it's clearly broken the way I'm doing it right now, because if I get busy with other stuff, then I'm it's like I'm in a time warp 1 week in the past, you know, and so I'm very much thinking about flipping it around the other way. And then there's another, at least with Google Reader, there's one other mode you can do, which is it's sort of an automatic ordering. So, like, if somebody posts on some place that's very infrequently updated, it'll jump to the head of the line over sites that update, like, you know, dozens of times a day. You know, and so I don't know. And then, of course, you could also look at individual feeds. Like, I could see, oh, I've got this much on this source and this much on that source and blah, blah, blah. I don't know. I might change that around. But my point is, I guess, that there are some advantages to my old way of doing it, which is just always keep CNN on in the background.
Yeah, that used to work pretty well.
I mean, okay. Yeah, it's pretty crappy, but, you know, at least it's...
Yeah. At least you know what the hell's happening recently.
Yeah, as opposed to a week ago, which I'm like, where the hell am I? You know, I don't know what happened in the last 4 days. I don't know. I right before we started the show, I flipped on a couple of websites to actually look at their front pages instead of their feeds to see what was going on right now. But, you know. Anyway. Time for another break. Oh, wait. Actually, Yvonne, you said you might have to go early. Do you have to go at this point?
I don't know. I could do one more segment, then okay. I got to run.
Let's do one more segment. Let's take a break, and we will be right back.
It's a special Halloween spooktacular show at the Ligonier Theater on Saturday, October 24th at 7:30 p.m. Come in costume and see a special sneak preview of the new movie, The House of the Wolfman. Starring Ron Chaney, Lon Chaney's grandson. The House of the Wolfman at the Ligonier Theater in Ligonier, Pennsylvania, just east of Pittsburgh on Route 30. The screening will be followed by the Creepy Classics reception and open house on the second floor of the theater, featuring thousands of rare horror and science fiction DVDs, posters, books, monster magazines, and collectibles for sale. Tickets are on sale now, but seating is limited. So call 724-238-4317. That's 238-4317. Or order online at creepyclassics.com. Don't miss a sneak preview of the new movie, The House of the Wolfman, at the Ligonier Theater, Saturday, October 24th at 7:30 p.m. The leaves are changing and falling. It's Halloween in beautiful Ligonier.
It's the new Halloween movie, House of the Wolfman, premiering in three cities this October, Los Angeles, New York, and right here in Ligonier. It's an old-fashioned, family-friendly monster movie. See House of the Wolfman, Saturday, October 24th at 7:30 p.m. at the Ligonier Theater.
Okay, we are back. Time for one last segment, and the topic I had suggested is Roman Polanski, a famous director, was convicted some, 30 years ago?
Yes.
Of, you know, essentially raping a 13-year-old girl.
Yes.
The specifics of this, as my light reading on this, is that there are several contravening factors. One is, yes, she was 13, but she was passing herself off as over 18 and looked over 18.
She was passing herself as over 18?
Apparently, she was. She, you know, she was telling him that she was like 19 or 20 or something. And she was and she was a 13-year-old that did not look 13. And
no, I did see the pictures. She did not look 13.
And,
I saw them.
And being a dad of a 13-year-old who has actually convinced people she was in college, I understand. Mm-hmm. But here's the flip side of that. Okay, so you might go into that.
It was still. He gave her like Quaaludes.
Yes.
And
he got her drunk.
Right.
He drugged her with Quaaludes, and she was protesting and saying no the
no,
whole time.
No. Right.
Because his part of his defense was, of course, I didn't know she was 13. Well, given his behavior, it wouldn't have mattered if she was...
as 25.
Right. You know, however, he was in deeper trouble because she was 13. He got convicted, and between his conviction and his sentencing, he skipped the country.
Well, let's clarify. There was a plea bargain,
okay, that was done.
Okay,
he pleaded guilty.
Right, and there was a plea bargain, and what happened was that during his psychiatric treatment that he was agreed to the plea bargain, it apparently became quite clear that the judge did not want to accept the plea bargain. Okay? And so that's when he decided to skip out of town.
Okay, I lost Yvonne for a second, but I got him back. What was the last thing you heard me say?
What is the last thing you heard me say?
I heard you finish a thought, and then I started yammering about...
I didn't hear you yammering. I was mentioning that he had taken off after, you know, it was quite evident that the plea bargain wasn't going to go through, and that's when he flipped out, and that's when he freaked out, and he'd skip the country. Now,
and where I picked this up was then that he lived overseas, he continued his directorial career, all of that sort of stuff, very successful, blah, blah, blah. And then last week he went to like something to pick up an award he was being given in Switzerland. The Swiss said, hey, we have an extradition treaty with the U.S. They arrested him, and now they're talking about sending him back. But the thing is, there's, you know, been a bit of a kerfluffle about this, with a lot of people saying, damn good we got him. Let's bring him back. Let's do whatever we need to do with him. And then there's another group of people saying, you know, it was 30 years ago. He's an old man. Let bygones be bygones. And even the victim of this crime, who is now in her 40s and has basically said, I wish this would all just go away. Leave him alone. I want to live my life. You know, I don't want any part of this. Because she's like, whatever harm he did to me when I was a child, I have long since worked through my issues. I'm now happily married. I have a family. The worst thing that can happen to me right now is to get this all dredged up and in the press again.
My whole problem with this is that, look, given the fact that we live under this legal system that we have chosen to exist, I don't find it acceptable that the reaction to, you know, what was happening to him was to go and, like, flee like that.
Yeah.
You know, I've had friends of mine who have been indicted, gone to trial, have been convicted, have had to appeal, have actually won the appeal, but they had to spend 2 years in jail while they fucking, you know, went through the damn appeal. You know, and you know, so that's been my thing. I just don't think that it's acceptable to do that. That's all.
Yeah, and you know, and I think I generally agree here. I mean, the thing is, you know, it seems like nobody's really disputing the original facts of this case very much.
No, nobody's disputing that.
No one's saying, you know, he was forced into the plea bargain, he was really innocent, he didn't do anything wrong. Absolutely nobody is saying that.
Now, what some people are saying is that apparently the judge, they are saying that apparently the judge had was unduly influenced or something like that, that apparently he, you know, he decided that for publicity's sake, he wanted to screw...
He was basically, I'm going to make an example out of this guy.
Right, right. You know, and so the reason he wanted to make an example was for his own publicity's sake. Okay? Not anything else. So there's been arguments about that, but notwithstanding that, that doesn't mean that that couldn't have been appealed, you know? I mean, that's the point,
well,
I guess.
No, but the thing is, your options for such things get narrowed quite a bit once you've actually pled guilty.
Well, it was part of a plea bargain, so if the plea bargain wasn't going to be accepted, he could have...
I guess I'm not familiar enough with the facts on where in the timeline that was, I guess.
Right.
I thought he had actually already done the pleading guilty part, but you're saying he had not?
I think he can withdraw the plea if the plea bargain is not accepted. So,
yeah.
But I don't know. One of our lawyer friends will probably correct us
probably.
On this.
And I'm not saying there aren't still options. It's just your range of options is less. You know, once you've said, yeah, I did it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. No, but you can appeal sentencing. I mean, you can appeal, you know, not necessarily. I mean,
And people are talking. There's certainly the possibility that he could be sent back to the U.S. and be given time served. He could be given time served, or the original victim could stand up in court and say, please, I don't want to relive this, and they could dismiss the charges. Yeah, there's all kinds of options. Or they could slam his ass in jail for the rest of his life. I don't know.
Yes.
Because, of course, at this point, he's got not just the original crime, but flight.
Right. Right. That's the extra part. So, anyway, I mean, I don't know. So, okay, so Roman Polanski. I don't know. Is there anything else then? I don't know.
No, I think that's it. One other, 10-second thing I wanted to mention. I was also reading recently about, apparently there was an art show somewhere in Europe, I think maybe London, where one of the things they were presenting was... a nude picture of Brooke Shields, but from when she was 10. And so there was a bit of controversy over this, you know, is this child pornography? What is this? Blah, blah, blah. Now, of course, it was, you know, an artistic picture done by a famous photographer, blah, blah, blah. You know, I guess around the same time, she was also naked in a movie, I think Pretty Baby, I think it was, which was Susan Sarandon and her and in a whorehouse in the West or something. Anyway, whatever. But the point was that the art gallery actually got pressured and removed the picture based on the fact that there was a lot of uproar about it. And I think the underlying question here is one of, you know, I think there's a hysteria going on about, you know, sort of the whole child porn thing. There was also a case where just a couple weeks ago or something, there was a couple who had their, I guess it originally happened earlier, but the court cases ended up or whatever. A couple had their kids taken away from them because they took some home photographs of their 2-year-old kids in the bath. And they had their kids taken away from them. They had to appeal it through the courts. They eventually got the kids back. They went to get the pictures developed at Walmart, and the person developing the pictures at Walmart called the police on them. You know, and then there's the teen sexting stuff where people are throwing teenagers that they're getting them. I don't know how many have actually gotten convicted and been registered as sex offenders, but they're, you know, they're charging these people at least with child pornography when a 14-year-old takes a picture of themselves to give to their boyfriend or girlfriend.
That's just moronic. I mean, this is stupid. I mean, you know, give me a break.
And this is all the kind of thing where I think it's like, okay, come on. You know, the laws on this are very the purpose of laws against child pornography are really about keeping kids from being victimized.
That's right.
You know, and if you've got, you know, innocent situations, or even not so innocent situations where kids are doing things amongst each other, you know, they're not necessarily victims there. And I know there are people that would argue they are anyway, but I think, you know, maybe this is a topic for a whole segment some other time, but I just wanted to mention, because I thought the whole thing of like, you know, my God, this is, you know, it's Brooke Shields. It was, you know, a professional photographer. It was done under controlled circumstances. Her parents were there. She has not suffered for it at all. I'm all of this kind of stuff. And meanwhile, people are going nuts about, oh my God, they're showing it. Oh my God, it's a naked 10-year-old girl. Ah! And I'm sorry. Come on. Get a grip of yourself and get, like, you know, go after the people who really are abusing children. You know, none of this nonsense. Anyway.
I'm with you on that.
We're out of time, and we're only going to do 4 segments today because Yvonne's got to go. But thank you, everybody, for joining us. We've had above-average numbers of listeners the last 2 weeks.
We're not boring you.
Yeah, I haven't actually counted last week yet, but the 2 weeks before that were pretty high. So thank you all for listening. Tell your friends if you like the show. Send us comments. I'm at ablesmay@ablesmay.com. I appreciate all your comments. Or post on my blog at ablesmay.com when I announce the episodes. We'd love to hear that feedback. And, you know, if you want to send us an audio file, you can do that too, and maybe we'll put it on. Anyway, thanks, everybody. That's it for the show. We'll see you next week. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.